Hey guys, Jay here. Just wanted to take a moment to let you know up front that we did have some problems with Skype this week, and it did affect the quality of our podcast. Unfortunately, you're going to hear a couple spots where it starts to skip and speed up, and the sound quality just drops. And we tried to clean it up as best as we could, but we couldn't cut out much more without losing content. So we decided to go ahead and leave the quality the way that it was and make sure that you guys got all the content that we had. The sections where it's messed up are usually only a few seconds long, so it shouldn't be too difficult to get through, and we promise we will have this straightened out for the next episode. So you guys enjoy this episode, and we'll see you next week. Welcome to episode 46 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week we discuss the man, the myth, the stash. It's Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 46 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we fight an endless war, day by day, against forces too advanced to comprehend and too numerous to count. Stiff upper lip, though, boys. Now, chap with the wings. Five rounds rapid. It is my week. I can't wait to talk about this. This is Gallifrey Public Radio. My name is Keir, and joining me in the GPR studios, as always, Jay. Good evening, sir.
Hello, how's it going?
Fantastic, as always. And the lovely and talented Melissa is also with us.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Today, as we promised last week, for all you listener out there who are really excited about this, we're going to talk about one of my favorite ancillary characters. I'm hesitant to say companion, but we're going to discuss that. We are talking about none other than General, formerly Brigadier, formerly Colonel, Sir Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart, also known as the Brigadier or simply the Brig. Really interesting character through a long running history of WHO, both classic and even a little bit of new by reference. Yes. And extensions. So interesting stuff from the Brig. Not only a very interesting character, but an interesting history through Whovian lore. So I'm gonna hold back for a second, because I know that with the two of you, you had to do a bit of immersion and kind of get more introduced to the Brig, other than some of the classic episodes that we had seen through some of our previous rewatches, stuff that's on Netflix, things like that. So I wanted to kind of get your takes on the intricacies of this particular character. And as we discuss him, we're almost always in these instances talking about the actor who played him throughout his entirety of Nicholas Courtney.
Yes.
So just from what you had seen prior to this, prior to us putting this onto the agenda and saying, you know what, we're going to placate Keir because he's kind of levitating a little bit. And
I'm just sick of hearing him. We're just going to go ahead and do it.
His just whole freaking life revolves around the Brig and canine. Brig and canine.
Kind of like Shaun and Dragons. Jeez.
Exactly,
get it over with.
Exactly. Chuck and bikes. So from what you had known previously, what was your kind of impression of the character itself?
Melissa, you want to go first?
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying off the air, shooter should prepare to be disappointed, because I don't have too much to say about this, because you guys have been there for my discovery of who the heck this dude is. They referenced him in New Who, and by that point I had already had enough of a background to know about him, but I'm not sure if I knew, like, had actually seen his episodes. And then we watched some other classic Who, and now I have seen him in a few episodes, and he's really cool. But again, I don't I don't think, like you said, like there was some, you know, it took a little bit of immersion, get like, you know, getting to know these characters or whatever, but I still don't feel that I am there with the brig yet.
Okay.
And I would like to be. I would, like, this podcast is actually for, like, you know, for me as a fan, like, I'm going to contribute what I can, but I have a feeling this is just going to kind of whet my appetite to go watch more classic episodes and actually get to know it better, because I don't have the comprehensive knowledge yet.
The role of clueless listeners shall be played by Melissa Mazza.
Who's the dude with the stash?
Yeah, so I'm a little bit more aware of the brig. I've seen a few episodes with him, but nothing to the point where I would, you know, I know who he is, but I'd never quite understood the gravity of it until very recently. You know, he was just, to me, he was a recurring character. That was pretty much it. You know, he was something to kind of tie into old stuff, you know, bring it back and give the Third Doctor primarily someone to play off of, since he was stuck on Earth the whole time. You know, so it was just, I don't want to say he was a plot point or a plot device, but yeah, you know, he was a supporting character and a recurring role kind of thing to me for the majority of the time I knew him.
Right. Yeah. And that's absolutely legitimate. Taking that surface value, that's entirely what he represents, because he was never what you may, by certain definitions, classify as a companion, because he very rarely saw the interior of the TARDIS, very rarely traveled with the Doctor, and really and did so by choice in a lot of instances. In fact, he probably had more otherworldly, other timely adventures outside of television appearances. So for a great percentage of the Whovian public, who, you know, go by what they've seen, that's to be a fair classification. You know, he's not a companion, but a colleague or a compatriot or something like that. But there's these fine lines and distinctions. So hopefully, you know, as a result of some of the things we've discussed, some times when he's either appeared in some episodes that we've watched as a group or references in New Who, both with 10th and 11th Doctor, and some of the times that he's been mentioned. In fact, most recently, sadly, in the Power of Three, when 11th gets the phone call to let him know that the brig has finally passed, you know, it carries a lot of weight. And that, and I think that actually got a lot of New Whovians wondering, oh, interesting, it kind of gut-punched the Doctor a little bit.
Yeah.
I wonder who the hell this guy was. I might do a little, you know, a little independent research on it.
Yeah, I know that there were a lot of friends that I had that, you know, once they saw that in the show, they're kind of like, why was the Doctor so upset about hearing somebody died? And it's like, well, because he was the brig. Do you not understand? You know, so it was kind of that thing of saying, hey, you know, the Doctor has somebody that he really cares about, somebody that is a really close friend of his, you know, and kind of bringing home that, I mean, because it all tied into him dying. You know, he thought that he could beat the clock and he could run away from it. And hearing that the brig died made him realize, you know, it's like, I can't do that. You know, people are going to die and this is my, I've got to deal with this.
Right, particularly with the brig, you know, you're, as we mentioned, we're dealing with an associate, or you know, you could have what you might classify as a friend, or maybe even in certain arguments, you might say he was outside of you know, classified companions, he was the Doctor's best friend on Earth, but you're dealing with someone that, if you were to try to explain why this had any significance to somebody who only knew who. Wow, that's tough. You could say, you know, you're dealing with an individual who has spanned nine generations or nine regenerations of the Doctor. Granted, in three of them were not, you know, televised or anything like that. They happened in novels or one, you know, in his actual face-to-face, I'm doing finger quotes here, face-to-face interaction with 10th only happened in a comic. But there were references all through the Sarah Jane Adventures, which happened during the time span of the of the of the universe that we're assuming was around 10th, because, you know, you actually have 10th appearing in a couple of Sarah Jane episodes, where they're talking about, you know, the brig being, you know, off on location. You know, he couldn't make it there for Sarah Jane's, well, the wedding that never happened and things like that. But so you've got, you know, from 2nd all the way to 10th, and then 11th gets the call to let him know that he's finally passed, and, you know, hence the gravity of it. You're spanning 40 years at that point. So just really, really an interesting way of saying that this was a touchstone to Earth.
Yeah.
And in fact, he was used as such in a lot of instances through episodes where he was the Doctor's direct connection back to communication with Earth. Not always welcome. You know, the Doctor got called upon a few times by the brig when he really did not want to return at the time, but always did, because they had that kind of a relationship. So
now, is that more on the shows, or was this like novels and things like that, that these kind of
things happened? Actually with the shows. I mean, I'll give you a little backdrop here. You know, to take the sort of the chronology, Alistair Lethbridge Stewart, Alistair Gordon Lethbridge Stewart, because you can't have less than four names in the UK, was born from a military family. You know, was had a strong moral compass throughout, but had, you know, the definite devotion to Queen and country, and even had a sort of a what do you want to call it, a super terrestrial, a non-terrestrial incident happened to him when he was in the Queen's Navy in the 1950s. As a result of that instance, though, it actually kind of got retconned from him. But as a result of in his first television premiere in the Web of Fear, Second Doctor, which we only have one of the multiple parts from, he was actually involved in the attack on London from the infamous robot Yeti, probably one of the worst Whovian baddies ever to be created by the prop department. But he survived that attack, was the only survivor of his squadron that survived the attack, was forced down into the London Underground to join with resistance forces, ended up leading those resistance forces, and that's where he ended up meeting Second Doctor. Mm-hmm. The Doctor was attuned to him because he, for some reason, didn't seem phased, which is an interesting point. It comes along with a lot of companions the Doctor takes under his wing. Didn't seem phased when they got exposed to the whole idea of, you know, time and space and travel and alien races and things like that. And he just took it all in stride, which kind of impressed the Doctor and sort of put him on a decent pedestal. So the theory was going among a lot of classic Whovians that the reason why he was this way, and that he just kind of took it all very similar to the way Clara did, you know, when we didn't know what Clara's background, and we're like, well, God, she, you know, she finds out about all this stuff and she just accepts it and just rolls with it. Well, the brig did the same thing, and the theory was that because he had this extra normal event in his past that was wiped from his memory, there was some sort of a subconscious element that said, you know, there's more to it out there, and he just accepts. Which was that one of the interesting things throughout with him is that while chaos is raining down all around, whether it be interventions with the Cybermen, whether it be the Ice Warriors who he has to grapple with in a couple of instances, or even, you know, we're dealing with the first appearance that we had a great intelligence. Nothing really seemed to shake him to the point where he could not assume command. So after these events in London, he decides that he's going to go to his higher military personnel and start requesting that an organization be put together that watches for these kinds of threats, you know, as he's been exposed to from the Doctor, and he knows from the Doctor that these things are not, you know, we're not alone, and there's other things out there that could very well and probably will come after us on Earth. And British military turned it down, so he put his career on the line, went to Washington, went to New York, and actually put it in front of the United Nations, and got the approval to form UNIT along with a couple of other senior military officers. which we saw in the episode Invasion, in case you want to go back and try and track that one down. It's not easy. You get to start seeing him span the Doctor's timeline because he's actually there to see, when the Third Doctor's regeneration, when the Time Lords send Third Doctor there, trap him on Earth, disable his TARDIS, and the Brig takes him on as Unit's scientific advisor. Mm-hmm. Because that was the kind of the mindset. You know, we've talked about the personality the Third Doctor's had, and that he was kind of like the James Bond, super spy but scientist kind of type.
Yeah, very very action hero but science oriented. Yeah.
Yeah, and he didn't really get chummy with a lot of people, so his relationship with the Brig was kind of like that too. They appreciated one another and respected one another, but you could tell that it was more of a business alliance. It was like, you know, two good coworker kind of things, rather than the very warm relationship, the almost comedic relationship that he had with Second.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and that's something I was talking to a friend about mine recently about this, and he was like, you know. He didn't know much about the Brigadier because I was kind of asking him about it, and he was like, "I always thought he was just, you know, comedic relief, and he was there just, you know, someone to frustrate the Doctor." And I was like, "No, the Doctor actually really likes him." And he's like, "Yeah, but every time I see him, he's insulting him and calling him stupid and this, that, and the other." And I was like, "Dude, what was the first thing you said to me when you came over?" He's like, "Oh, I called you a chat." Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
that's how guys are. You know, it's a bunch of chest thumping and stuff, but it's. Yeah, you know, you could tell deep down he really liked this guy. He may, yeah, you know, and like you said, it may not have been genuine affection, but it was, you know, very much that he respected him.
Absolutely, yeah. And by the way, that is readily available if you want to see case in point of that kind of a relationship and their kind of banter on that. Go ahead and watch Spearhead from Space.
Yeah,
you know, readily available episode, and it gives a great, you know, kind of an exemplification of the kind of relationship that he and Third Doctor had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's actually the first my intro to him, and you're right, it's easily available because Spearhead is on Netflix, and this was right after Second regenerated into Third, so mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool, their relationship of, like, you know, it takes a little getting used to, but then he just accepts him, like, yeah, this is the Doctor.
Yeah, and the Brig actually protects him in his initial regen period when he's a little disoriented and kind of helpless. You know, kind of sticks up for him, make sure that he's got, you know, medical attention and so forth, even though the Doctor has no idea what he's dealing with two hearts and whatnot. But, but you know, and finds ways that he can allow the Doctor to be helpful and bring him in on some capacity, even though he's still trying to figure himself out. And then he goes to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, you end up with like a dozen episodes between the Brig and Third Doctor, where it's all business, you know, dealing with all kinds of things. I mean, you've got the Autons, you've got the Daleks, you've got that great, if you get an opportunity to see the Three Doctors, that's a great collection to kind of see how he deals with all of them, you know, and the Brig being able to actually recognize First Doctor, having never seen him before, and just seeing the way he's carrying himself, and he knows, oh God, I've never met before, but I know him, and that's kind of the relationship that they have, carries through. Note that during this run with Pertwee, you've got the Brig's first encounter with the Master, which happens during Terror of the Autons, and they had a lot of run-ins as well. Nicholas Courtney shared a lot of screen time. I give Brig credit, as has been pointed out to me in very distinct fashion, the Brig is the only human being ever to knock out the Master in one punch. So hats off to the Brig for not only being able to command a battalion and wield a revolver with the best of them, he's got a mean right cross as well. So good to know. Then it gets to the end of the third period where he has to deal with the Great One on Planet of the Spiders and has been mortally wounded. And it's really interesting to note that when this happens, the Doctor knows that his regeneration is imminent, He wants to get back to Earth to be in the company of Sarah Jane and the Brig before that regeneration happens. So even though their relationship was kind of, business casual, mm-hmm. And Sarah Jane was kind of new to the scene as far as companions go, because it was, for the longest time, it was Joe Grant as a scientific assistant. Third Doctor wanted to get back to Earth to make sure that he was there for it, which gets us into, takes out of that into Fourth with another episode that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't really watch them on Netflix. I think you can you get Robot?
No.
Fourth Doctor's Robot?
No, that's not on Netflix.
Oh, it's probably on one of the DVD collections that's available, though, so you might want to look that one on disc. Great episode with a really crappy looking robot, but it's Tom Baker's first. And has a great interaction with the Brig, because now you see the Doctor, completely off his nut, and shades of the kind of goofy antics that the Brig had to deal with Second. But now it's even more amped, because in the early stages, all Fourth Doctor wants to do is get in the TARDIS and go. Does not want to be on Earth. He knows he's got the ability to leave. He wants out. And it's actually, it takes a little while for their friendship to kind of keep that magnet together.
Yeah.
So have you had an opportunity to see that one, Jay?
Do what now?
Have you had an opportunity to see Robot?
No, I haven't seen that one yet, no.
Okay. Definitely a good one to see, because of, obviously, it's giving the audience an introduction to Baker and seeing what he's going to be doing with it. And he's completely nuts through the entire thing, because he's lived through half of the four episodes. But it's interesting to note that between Sarah Jane and the Brig, they are the only anchors that the audience has to any semblance of what they've known up to this point for 11 seasons at that point. So they're trying to make sense of what the heck Baker is doing, because for the first couple of minutes you see him on screen, he's not even speaking in coherent sentences. He's just babbling phrases that are completely disconnected. And it's actually the conversation between Sarah Jane and the Brig that give the audience the explanation. Sarah Jane says, there's a period where, he's kind of like this, and the Brig understands, because he's seen something similar go through with a Third and so forth. But it proved to me that the Brig was a type to not only just continue to roll with it. Okay. This, and if nothing else, he is a constant state of change. So expect the unexpected and just accept it and do what you can with it. But in all of the instances, since there's always some crisis going on, the Brig is always there to keep things together, even when the Doctor can't be relied on in those kind of intermittent moments, or when the Doctor's not even there. There's a few instances where we see when he's not even present, in the situation, and the Brig is left to command his forces against bulletproof aliens and things like that.
When was that with the bulletproof aliens? Or?
Well, there were a lot of instances where a lot of the things you take that episode in particular, take Robot, or even go back and take a Terror of the Autons. You're dealing with these plastic. This sort of living plastic thing, and obviously, since it has no central nervous system or anything of that sort, they're just firing shots into it, and it's doing absolutely nothing but just melting shoulders off and so forth. You start dealing with things like the Ice Warriors, and they've got the protective
the
sort of living armor that they have that it is completely impenetrable to anything that humans have been able to develop up to this point. Deal with the Daleks. Well, okay. Case in point. They were throwing, mortar rounds at them, and couldn't do much. But through it all, as a result of the persistence, as a result of keeping UNIT organized, along with his supporting officers who ended up becoming his replacements when he finally retired in the 1970s, you never really saw him rattled in anything in military fashion. The only times you ever saw him in more of an emotional state or in a, I don't know, any other sort of a form, was when it had to do with either a companion, a threat to a companion's life, or a concern of the doctor's that he was being called upon. So it was the civilian life that got to him far more than his military career.
So we've spent a lot of time talking about the brig as, you know, an ally of sorts, of a, you know, a squad mate or however you want to describe it. But, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at him. And one of them you kind of mentioned earlier, that it's hard to fit him into the role, but to some extent he kind of was the first real male companion. You know, not in the traveling sense, not in the, you know, the sense that we usually fit to companion, but, you know, he really was one of the people that the doctor counted on to keep him grounded, which is ultimately the role of any companion.
Right. If you wanted to broaden the definition for a moment of companion to, as you mentioned, the idea of being that lightning rod for the doctor, so that at moments when situations or emotions or his own demons could get the better of him, you know, he has another individual in his company that pulls him back into focus. If you want to use that as a defining force, I would definitely say the brig has done so, because there are times when the brig has been able to expose him to solutions or open his eyes to situations that the doctor on his own seemed incapable of being able to do. There was some of the novels, one in particular, Battlefield, where he actually has to team up with Seventh Doctor to go against this sorceress Morgaine, and he had been retired from military service for 15 years or so at that point, but was actually willing to go back and reinstate himself within unit in order to lead the forces to do so. Because the doctor was literally incapable of handling it on his own and had to reach out to him in that regard.
Now, was this I remember it was the Seventh Doctor when the brig saw him and had not seen him in that regeneration before and recognized him, like knew it was the doctor. And the doctor pointed out, he's like, wait, you know me? You haven't seen his face. He's like, yeah, I know, but I know it's you.
Mm-hmm. Wait, that was when he was the Seventh Doctor regenerated into Seven, or?
I can't remember. I want to say it was.
It wasn't the first Seventh Doctor story. It wasn't right after.
That's
he
not
returned.
What I mean. I guess I was thinking.
It was
it
the
might
first
have
time
been
the
in Battlefield. Yeah, I think it was in the episode Battlefield, because you got. And obviously, remember, you got Ace involved in this one. She's the one running off with, you know, with bazookas and whatnot. So, but yeah, I think it was Courtney's last appearance in the standard series, and it was his first time sharing screen with Seventh. So his first and only opportunity to share scene work with Sylvester McCoy. So, but it's interesting. You talk about the companionship and how one of the things that also defines companion is, even though the companion is there to assist the doctor, help the doctor, lead the doctor to betterment of himself at times, you know, remind him of the need for compassion or whatever the case may be from episode to episode. We also were discussing before that the companion goes through arcs, you know, and we see advances. And the brig's absolutely one of those instances. There are many, many instances where the doctor comes to brig's rescue. Jump back a couple of regenerations to the Modron Undead, which is Fifth Doctor. And there's this really, this seriously timey-wimey episode where there's a paradox situation, because the fact that a future brig comes back and actually touches hands with the present day, which is mid-1970s Brig, when he has decided that he's going to be a school teacher and teach mathematics. And one of his students is actually Turlough. So that's the link that brings the doctor in to try and correct the time anomaly and fix the paradox that actually, for the great entirety of the episode, renders the Brig completely unable to remember any of his past with the doctor or any of these extraterrestrial things that he's ever been exposed to. So it definitely works in both directions. They have both come to each other's aid on numerous occasions. So I guess by companion qualifications, if you want to take it outside of just saying, oh, companion is anyone who rides around in the TARDIS and every once in a while, if it's a girl, wants to snog the doctor. So not qualifying in that regard.
Right.
But I mean, like everything that you just said about how they both saved each other, it's been mutual. Definitely, like, that makes it a companion in my book.
Yeah, yeah, I would absolutely say so. And he did do some travel in the TARDIS as well. There was the novel Dying Days, where the Eighth Doctor has to help him with an issue going on, an uprising among the Ice Warriors on Mars. So, which is actually the instance where, if you want to look up by classification, find that at the point when he finally passed, he was classified in British military as general. He was given that promotion in that novel as a result of dealing with the Mars incursion with the assistance of Eighth. So, and then we started seeing him pop up a lot in the next millennia. He showed up in the Sarah Jane adventures through a number of episodes. And I think it was just kind of circumstantial that they didn't get an opportunity to try to work him, to work Courtney into one of the scripts at the same time that David Tennant was available. But really kind of a regretful thing, because
that would have been epic, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the time they started putting that together, Courtney's health was failing and things, and we lost him in 2011. So that never came to pass. There were, like I said, there was a couple of episodes in the Sarah Jane Adventures where she's, mentioning the doctor to the Brig, and they have those kind of conversations, those sort of reminiscing conversations and things. But then by the same token, you've got the one episode of the spinoff series that Tennant is in, and he asks about the Brig specifically, and Sarah Jane has to explain that he's on location and isn't going to be available to be able to come out for the wedding or some of these other things that they had planned. It was just kind of unfortunate that we didn't get a chance to see him beyond that Seventh Doctor episode, as far as within the canon of actual Who episodes. But we're not done with the Lethbridge Stewart legacy.
No, we're not.
Because of Kate, dear, wonderful Kate, who is actually, if you go back and you want to look, Kate actually gets referenced a couple times because the Doctor had, the Brig had been married a couple of times over the course of his history on the show. Why not? And Kate's birth was actually referenced in I can't remember which episode, but it goes back, I want to say sixth or so. Someone's going to call me out on this, I'm sure.
Wait, I'm going to look it up right now.
Do that. But it's like, one of those things where you find out a friend that has a baby and, oh, that's wonderful and things like that. But that's why when we finally get around to Power of Three with 11th and we meet, Kate Lethbridge, mm-hmm. and he calls her out on it. This is, well, you're not keeping the hyphenated name, Lethbridge Stewart and things. And, she didn't want to ride in her father's coattails and things, but hell, when you got coattails that long, hop on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
All I'm finding on the wiki is the pros, the scales of injustice and downtime. It says that he married someone named Fiona and they had a daughter, Kate. And interestingly, he also married someone didn't marry. He had a son with someone in Sierra Leone in another pros, it's called Transit.
Yeah, there's a couple of conflicts. Specifically with the Brig, there are a few continuity issues with some of the novels that were published because they ended up using alternate Brigs. We had a couple of alternate reality storylines that really kind of monkey around a bit with our, our Earth's Briggs timeline. Yeah. So just read them and enjoy them and let them go. So they're just going to make a mess. But so I don't know. I mean, so you've got companion, you've got compatriot, and then, I mean, there's, but companion is kind of a, still a working relationship, I guess, to a certain degree. They have a purpose, you know, in their adventures and their exploits and where they travel to. Yeah. But Jay, you wanted to kind of look at it as also as just the idea of the textbook definition of a true friend, you know, or potentially even a best friend.
Yeah, because I mean, let's be honest, there's no one that you can really apply that title to more than you can the Brig. You know, you've got companions who come and go. You've got people that the Doctor has clearly cared about and loved. But if you try and nail it down and say who, you know, if the Doctor, say, you know, like, say he had a chance to invite someone to his, to marrying River Song, who would be the person he'd call to be his best man? And I mean, it's the Brig. You can't get around that. The Brig really was his best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so, for me, like, you know, you guys have been there for my journey through learning about Classic Who and stuff. I didn't know any of this for a very long time. Like, and he's so important. It's crazy. Like, people who are listening to this, like, go read those books. Go watch Spearhead from Space. Like, it's crazy how important he was to this whole story.
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if you don't have the access to the extended content and things, just from some of the, you know, the pivotal episodes that really kind of show, and some of the best ones just happen to be the ones where the Brig is there for both sides of a regeneration process. Mm-hmm. Because then you get to really see the fact that he's unflappable when it comes to these sort of things. You know, there's issues where, you know, you've got, take that Battlefield episode, you know, with Seventh. You know, they're dealing with this, with this issue of this insane sorcerer or sorceress, when the Doctor is rendered incapable, the Brig is the one to step up and actually take down the baddie with a revolver and 7 silver bullets. I mean, for crying out loud. And he was in his 70s at the time. I mean, he's just as Shooter had defined him. You know, he called him. I'll quote him because he put it down very succinctly. He refers to the Brigadier as a most loyal and capable friend of the Doctor, a true, and I love the way he phrased this, I give you all the credit in the world on this, Shooter, a true hero of Earth, because that's really what he represented. I mean, we've got companions that were not necessarily human. They were not always of terrestrial origin and things, but the Brig was the representative of the determination, of the persistence and the moral compass of humanity, of Earthlings, that the Doctor was endeared to throughout his regenerations. So he was the exemplification of that kind of individual, of human, that the Doctor knew was worth protecting. Because, you know, if the Earth was capable of creating someone of that caliber, then it must not be a bad place. And Shooter kind of wraps up. He's like, I'll buy him a pint anytime. Well, damn straight. Probably drink his bitters, room temperature warm as they did through the 70s and 80s, but that's fine. You know, choke it down anyway. but that's that runs the gamut there. He was for queen and country, by all counts, protector of both colleague or comrade and civilian, and beyond. You know, there were times when he got involved in having to deal with protecting even, non-terrestrial races as a result of his feeling that it was inherently right, guided in those cases by the Doctor. So, yeah, I would probably classify that as one of the truest friends you could possibly rely on, someone who put his life on the line, put his career on the line on a number of instances, and even came back to his career after being comfortably retired for 10 or 20 years because he was asked to, and he was simply asked to, and that was all. It wasn't even a threat that was happening on Earth. So it wasn't, you know, you talk about him being a hero of Earth, but at that point it had extended far beyond, and he was doing it strictly out of his care and concern for the Doctor. So, yeah. Stand up, dude.
Very, very much so, yeah.
But
I want to go back to him as an ally, because you're coming in and out here. I just wanted to say, because we have, I want to touch more on, maybe we can come back to it, how the fact that he started UNIT. Me as a new Whovian, I don't know anything about Brigadier General, but I knew a lot about UNIT. Like, that was him. Yeah. We've been talking about him as a person, but I think the legacy, and also, speaking of his legacy, I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that Kate will be returning, and in what capacity? But, that's his, Kate Lethbridge-Stewart is his legacy, and UNIT is his legacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we know that Kate's coming back for the 50th. She's confirmed to be part of the 50th. Beyond that, I don't see why they wouldn't continue to use her. I mean, you've got, a fantastic actress like Gemma Redgrave playing her. You've got, all of the history that comes with the Lethbridge Stewarts. There's no reason why we're not going to see her again. And I would, she could take over the role of Brigadier easily. She's got the family. She knows the Doctor. She grew up with stories about him. So I don't see why she wouldn't take over the role that the Brigadier played.
Right. Well, maybe not necessarily or in any attempt to recreate that sort of companionship.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the fact that, depending on what they want to do with subsequent series, if there are going to be more, global or even wider scale threats that are going to involve UNIT, it's great to have a familiar kind of anchor with that organization. So it isn't just, who are these guys that are, they're not Army, they're not Navy, they're not British, they're not, I don't know what they are. But they're involved with these things. UNIT hasn't really been utilized much since 10th, and spinning off Torchwood and that sort of thing. So this would allow you to be able to work that aspect of it back in, hopefully not to the extent of just saying, we need more explosions and guys with guns, because the brig was notorious for blowing things up.
Oh, yeah.
It's just any opportunity to have, we've got a little bit left in the budget. Call the pyrotechnics crew in. We're going to blow up a shed somewhere behind this guy's farmhouse. So there's a lot of crappy explosions at the Brigadier's hands. But using Kate as that idea of, since UNIT was, in essence, his labor of love, or I should say his legacy as far as his military legacy, and created for really for all the right reasons. It wasn't a matter of having military prowess. It wasn't a conquering force. It wasn't a it wasn't even necessarily a peacekeeping force. So it's not like the blue helmeted UN troops and things like that. This was a matter of being a watchdog group for threats unknown, in essence. Why would that, why would you not want to keep that in your back pocket as far as a showrunner is concerned to say, we need to work in some new villains here, but Doctor can't be the only one to deal with these things because they're arriving in such large forces that somebody would be tipped off to this, the fact that there's, 15 saucers in the sky. Somebody's going to pick up on the radar. So we need to, keep UNIT there as the connection to the human infrastructure.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And thankfully, they never really got to the point where they started utilizing UNIT off-world. they could have very well done that, because, you know, the whole idea unit was actually, as far as a military organization, was very well structured. You know, Brig did his job, you know, putting that together as a very cohesive, no pun intended, as a cohesive unit,
right?
For military strength, because of the fact that they the chain of command was rigidly enforced, and orders were carried out, and even when the orders were very unorthodox, they were coming from a position, whether it was, you know, the Brig or Benton or any of the others, that always seemed to work itself out right, because they didn't just follow blind military protocol, which was one of the little things that they tried to work in every once in a while, that if you were just relying on the Royal Navy or just relying on the Queen's Army and things of that sort, they had so much structure to it that often they weren't able to make impulsive decisions, you know, call audibles and that sort of thing, because they were so accustomed to dealing with an enemy that you know. Well, what happens when you're dealing with an enemy that you don't know and you're going to have to improvise? And the insinuation was that formally structured military organizations were incapable of doing so, whereas UNIT was more adaptable because it was built on the idea of we're dealing with a new unknown. So they could make those sort of rash decisions or impulsive decisions, which just happen to work themselves out every time.
Yeah.
But loads of content out there to be able to enjoy. A lot of the great stuff. As I said, most of his TV appearances are going to happen during Third Doctor. You can get your hands on a good number of those. I would suggest getting a chance to see any that you can find with his interactions with Fourth and Fifth, in that order. Because there isn't a lot available that you can get with second. Obviously, a lot of it was lost. But with fourth and dealing with Baker, you get to see a lot of the chumminess and the humor between the two. You can't help it with Baker, but
right, yeah.
But you get to see a lot of that humor in the face of, you know, daunting circumstances. And with fifth, their relationship was really a matter of, there was a lot of respect between the two, because Fifth was, you know, Davison was the compassionate doctor, and he was that sort of a return to the, you know, wanting to be the protector. And so that resonated very well with the Brig, and they had a good working relationship in that regard because of the fact that they were a very similar mind on that idea of doing what was necessary for the protection of the human race and that sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Great to see those too.
Yeah, and I mean, there's, you can find more of the Brigadier stuff in the extended universe, you know, in the books and things like that. Some of the audio dramas, things. Yeah, he's one of those characters that just gets sprinkled throughout.
Yeah. So. And obviously, you know, we did mention Sarah Jane Adventures, which you can get you can get on disc from Netflix and watch those. He appears in, I think, 3 or 4 of those, I think.
Netflix has discs.
Yeah. See, somebody reminded me that the other day. I thought that was kind of quaint. I'm wondering if I have one of those machines that actually plays those things.
Yeah.
But, grab a hold of those. You've got, well, there is comic material out there for the people that have the means to be able to track that stuff down. This is Comic-Con seasons.
Yep.
So go out there and try to find those too. Loads of stuff to enjoy. And lots of retrospectives on YouTube that you can enjoy as well about Courtney as an actor and as the, you know, and the Brig as a character. So
now I have a question for you guys. Do you have any personal episodes of his that you think anyone, like, you know, if you're going to learn about the Brig, you got to see this episode?
I think the best one for people that are just trying to get into it is probably the easiest one we mentioned before, is the Spearheads from Space. Mm-hmm. You know, that shows you a good example of the Brig. You know, it's a good example of who he is and what he stands for and that kind of thing. And it's going to be one of the easier ones for people to find. So it's not this huge investment of time trying to hunt something down. So if you just want to get a taste of the Brig and figure out who he is, that's going to be the easiest and most succinct way of doing it.
Yeah, and it gives you, because of the fact that it's happening on a regeneration point, you end up getting a lot of really good interaction from the Brig as far as being, you know, as we mentioned earlier, him being the point of explanation for the audience. So as you're going through and you're sort of learning who he is, he's also the one that's proving to you that he's supposed to be there, that he's a trusted character, and that he's, you know, and he's protecting the Doctor at a point when the Doctor is vulnerable. So that's important to us.
Yeah.
And just drives the point home. So yeah, Spearhead from Space is definitely one that you want to lock into. Similarly on that vein, a little harder to grab a hold of necessarily, but definitely worth trying to do, would be either the, on either side of the regeneration from third into fourth, either Planet of the Spiders or Robot on the other side. So, which I don't, I'm jumping through right now to see whether or not, Netflix is carrying either of those. I know they have the Three Doctors,
yeah,
which would definitely be a good one. It may not be terribly explanatory as far as the Brig, but it does show his importance to the Doctor across multiple regenerations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's it's worth getting a, you know, taking a spin through, and obviously, you know, being readily available, worth taking a look at. Looking through what else is on Netflix, you know, not seeing others that you can readily grab a hold of that'll show. Some of the others you might have to there's a number of sequences and maybe 4 or 5 minute chunks of episodes that have been allowed to persist on YouTube that'll give you some opportunity to see his involvement in other episodes. Modern Undead is a good episode to be able to tap into. And Invasion, I think I'd seen a couple of clips. That's going back to Second Doctor on that one. So put yourself in black and white mode for that one. But yeah, and then as far as episodes go, for novels, we'll talk about that another time. Comics, we can talk about that another time, because I know those are on our agenda, which we'll get to.
So, yes, I think that about does it. I mean, it's a good starter spot for you to get into the Brig and find out who the man with the mustache really is.
Who didn't have the mustache in the last couple of years, which totally throws a lot of people. They're like, oh, you couldn't get rid of that. And he's like, no, the 80s were over, guys. You know, by late 1990s, 2000s, I had to shave. I was getting kind of tired of this thing.
Yeah, but definitely wore it with pride, and one of the better looking mustaches out there in that time period.
Very true.
True. If you could pull off the mustache that everyone else had, you're doing something right.
I mean, you had him, Freddie Mercury, and Magnum P.I. Everybody else was just a joke.
Yeah, that's true.
The power trio.
Yeah. So we just had Comic-Con close recently, and not a lot of news that came out of it, which is surprising.
The news being the fact that there was no news.
Yeah.
I've been super busy lately, and today, you know, I came home, I told you guys, I'm like, oh my God, I have 2 minutes to do the podcast. I have not been home all day. I was expecting to open up, you know, one of these websites that my nerdy ass goes to all the time, at finding tons of Who news, and there was nothing. Especially in this time of Comic-Con, I am disappointed. But I think that this bodes well for the 50th. Like, they are keeping things under wraps.
Mm.
So no matter what, we're going to be surprised.
Yeah.
But so what is the little bit of news that we do have?
I mean, one of them is the Moffat coming out and confirming rule number one. He says, I've lied my arse off for about the 50th. You know, they ask him why Captain Jack wasn't in the 50th, and he says, how do you know what it is and who's not in the 50th? And,
you know, I felt so bad about this yesterday, because John Barrowman tweeted yesterday, so today we're recording on Wednesday, he was like, guys, like, you're really making me feel bad saying that I'm lying about being in it. Like, I'm not in the 50th, and I'm very disappointed. In so many words, 140 characters said this.
Yeah. And because he was, Moffat was being grilled not only on that point, but also, you know, how many living doctors are there really going to be? Are you going to be referencing them? Are they going to be, you know, on a screen somewhere? Are you going to do another voiceover like you did in the finale where, you know, you're representing them, but they're not involved, and blah, 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 blah. I mean, we've got at least, you know, we know that we're dealing with, as far as the Rose and 10th, this is the true 10th.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the human doctor.
It's not Handy Doctor.
Right. Because this is actually, I think they're assuming that as a result of the kind of the way that they had structured it, that this is from second season, I guess.
Well, it would have to be.
Yeah. So they're, you know, they said that it's, they sort of treated it as something that could be handled as an extracurricular activity or extracurricular adventure, which I would think that if it doesn't have any sort of an impact on the way the rest of that season played out, that there's some retconning involved at the end of it all, but who knows? Did not get a whole lot. In fact, what the crowd had been exposed to, as far as what they were allowed to see, the gag order was stringent. They must have scared the living crap out of the people.
Oh, yeah.
In Hall H, that they were not allowed to record, redistribute, you know, anything. The only thing we got out of it was a couple of still shots of Daleks being blown up, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and the announcement with that being that the Daleks are going to be in the 50th.
Right. So. Takeaway is there are Daleks.
Yeah. Yes. Which, oh my God, the Daleks are back. I didn't see that coming. Holy crap.
Sorry for the spoiler, guys.
And we had known that they were going to be bringing back Pizza the Hut, the Zygons, so <Yeah. laughs> we'll be seeing them too. It's not a lot of development in that regard. Did get some interesting news about further development about how pleased that Gaddis was with how the biopic was being done for Adventures in Time and Space, the retrospective or the sort of pseudo docudrama about Hartnell's origins with First Doctor and the early stages of the show when it was first being comprised. A lot of glowing praise for the actor whose name is eluding me at the moment. It's really going to kill me that I don't have it up in front of me, but I was trying to draw it from memory and my memory just pooped all over the place.
David
Warner, yes, thank you, representing Hartnell and doing an impeccable job of it, apparently, and setting the bar for the rest of the cast who have been stepping up, and they're all very pleased with how the production's been coming along on that one.
Yeah.
And Stimo's only a third of the way into writing the Christmas episode. So people are all asking, so what can you tell us about the regeneration, how that's going to come out? He goes, damned if I know. I've only written 20 pages of the thing so far. So, whoops.
Yep.
So he's got work to do.
But again, yeah. He lies.
Well, that, I don't know. I pretty much tell people, you know, that's a great way to get people off your back and say, how the hell should I know? I haven't finished writing the stupid thing yet. And have I also mentioned to you that we just announced the rollout schedule for Sherlock at the same time, too? So get off my freaking back, you know?
Oh, yeah, dude, that weekend is going to be so crazy busy.
By busy.
I mean, I'm not going to leave, you know, I'm going to be in front of a screen that whole weekend. Because I think there's, what is it, a Catching Fire comes out that weekend, and then Doctor Who, and then Sherlock. It's like, oh my.
Yeah, well, a little bit busy. I'm going to make sure that I get some extra sleep, because I'm not going to be able to close my eyes for about 29 hours.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
but it's going to start coming at you now. Since we didn't get a whole lot out of Con, other than the fact that this kind of spells some of the we had some mention, I remember a couple weeks ago that the BBC had come out saying, you know, we want to try to get the news for you about who's going to be 12th by late August or September. So we wanted you to be comfortable with who the transition was going to be. You know, and I remember seeing that was going around as, you know, we want to take care of you so that you're not constantly screaming at us and making your betting pools and all those things. But now I'm kind of getting the impression that they're not ready to do that. Or that they're not willing to do that, or at least Moffat and company are not willing to do that. And they're ready to hold out a lot longer to make that announcement. I don't know.
Yeah, they did confirm at the con that they don't know who's playing 12 yet.
Mm.
Right. So I've got to wonder, you know, when he comes out and says, you know, when we know, we want you to know, I don't think that's true. Because if they've got the ability to withhold it so that they can be certain that they are going to handle the unveiling in a way that they think has the highest impact. Because leaks suck. You know, they kind of take all the wind out of the sails of something that could be like this great announcement, you know, and they can make an event out of it. But if they are unable to do so, it becomes one of those things where, you know, the rumor mills are buzzing and the people are crying wolf here and there. And then finally somebody's got some hard evidence. And by the time, you know, the BBC has to backpedal into it and admit, yes, correct, you know, we have to confirm that all the rumors are true. That's, I know personally, I don't enjoy that as much. You know, I'd rather have the idea of the curtain being drawn back and hello kind of event. I think that'd be a lot more fun. Take, you know, what we had in the finale when Hurt shows up on screen and everybody's jaw goes, blah, you had to admit.
Yeah.
Even though it might have angered you, the fact you had no fracking clue what was going on, you enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's something I've been talking about before is, you know, I miss the surprise regenerations. I miss that moment of, holy crap, what the hell's going on? Who the heck is this? You know, and we don't get that anymore. I mean, here we know exactly who it is or, you know, when it's going to happen. And, you know, here shortly, we're going to know exactly who it is we're going to expect. And it's like, you've got to shut yourself down completely if you want that experience again. That's why I enjoyed the whole thing with John Hurt so much, is because it was that moment of, what the hell is happening?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we enjoy. You know, it might not be as enjoyable if it happens all the time, you know, and we're completely kept clueless. We love to kind of pursue little spoilers here and there. You know, we like to get excited about things that are coming down the pipe. But with some of these major events, you know, just like when we were talking about this towards the end of the last series and the whole idea of, you know, are we going to find out the name of the doctor? And we kind of agreed, you know what, we really don't want to know.
Yeah.
Because it would kind of pull from everything that we come to appreciate about the show, and you want to keep a certain air of mystery to a lot of these things, great or small. And this kind of thing, I think, would be more enjoyable if it were a huge reveal. You know, it confused the hell out of us when we saw General Louise Coleman before we were supposed to see General Louise Coleman.
Yeah.
And it's those kinds of things that you trip over that get everybody talking. So, I don't know.
They've actually been really good about it, actually. We tend to say that we're scared, like you said, Jay, that we'll never have another regeneration again, that we don't know what's coming. But with the way that they've handled things lately, I wonder if we will. I wonder if they're never going to, you know, they've said, oh, we don't know who it's going to be. I wonder if they're just going to always say that until they show them.
That would be a huge tip of the hat to the production crew and to the BBC in general, if they are able to actually maintain that degree of secrecy on something like that, because that would prove to me that they've been able to actually adapt with the ever sharpening eye of the internet, you know, the eye of Sauron that's focused upon them and sees every move, you know. And when you've got, you know, spy photography and paparazzi with telephoto lenses hanging out on hotel rooftops and whatnot, trying to get, you know, pictures of set locations and find out who's coming in and out of trailers or port-a-johns on set and whatnot. I mean, if they can find a way to beat the system in an ever-evolving system, they have now proven themselves to be masters of their craft.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we've got to hold on to the small surprises. We really do, because that's, you know, the better the more we can get, the better it is. But yeah, it's just like you were saying, you know, it's not going to happen for much longer. It's getting harder and harder. So just hold on to the small things. Yeah. Kind of like the little teasers that we get from the Comic-Con trailer, which nobody outside of Hall H has been able to see. I mean, they lock this down tight, but, yeah. There are some, write-ups about it and some descriptions, and we won't go into it because it can tend to get a little bit spoilery, so
a little, yeah.
If you do want to check it out, go over, you know, you can look at the show notes and gallifreypublicradio.com/46. The link will be in there, and you can read it for yourself. It's an interesting description, but I would have loved to have been able to see this, because this just reading about it, I'm like, oh, I want to see it. I want to see it so bad. It does not help with the whole "is it November" thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of thirsty right now.
Just slightly. So
we are now, I think this coming weekend on BBC America, they will be airing the 7th installment in the Doctor's Revisited series. If you have not had an opportunity to catch these, please do. They're usually pretty good about at least recapping the interview segments that precede the classic episode, or I should say the featured episode that goes along with them. So they do about a 20-25 minute series of connected interviews with cast and crew, past and present, past as many of them that are available. And they take the present cast and crew and actually sort of get their opinions on, at least in this instance, since we're still tapping back into Classic Who, about their, how they felt that the origins of the show or the early stages of the show have been an influence on the way that they do things today. All the ones I've done at this point have been exceptional. I've really, really enjoyed them. And I've been using them actually to sort of help people who couldn't quite click with some of the earlier Doctors, and they just didn't get it. They're like, oh, Pertwee's just, he's like with that goofy cape and everything, or oh God, Sixth Doctor in that freaking suit. What the hell is the story with that thing? And but these help quite a bit in a very succinct fashion. 20 minutes and you get it. Lots of great material. They interview Tennant a lot. In almost all of them, they sort of get wrapped up in the last couple of minutes by Stephen Moffat, who kind of, at being the rabid Classic Who fanboy that he is, explains why he thinks that the episode that they're about to pair the interviews off with, which have been things like episodes like the Aztecs and Tomb of the Cybermen and things like that, why he felt that they were exemplary episodes for that Doctor. Mm-hmm. And does a really nice job of explaining it too. So good stuff to get a hold of on BBCA if you have the opportunity. I think they've now published, I think Amazon carries a disc that has at least the first four or five.
I think it's the first four.
Okay. And they'll obviously be following with those. I can't wait to see. Well, I'll be interested to see this one for Sylvester McCoy, because he was not a very well appreciated Doctor because he was being given the 80s. And the writing is not exactly mind-blowing stuff. But there are a couple of really good episodes in there. I'll be interested to see which episode they actually pair this off with. I think it's the one where he squares off with the Doctor. He gets into a near wrestling match. With the Master. So see on that one. And then I can't wait to see what they end up doing for McGann.
Oh yeah.
Because how do you explain the fact that you've got an actor who was so capable of doing some interesting thing with the roles, then you hand him that script and then nothing. Talk about, arrested development or cheated opportunities. Man.
Yeah. But,
so yeah, get a hold of those. And they're continuing to publish the short stories for the kids, the kids' novels.
Yes.
They're now up to, I forget what the last one.
Let me see. I actually have that story pulled up here. Well, I had it a second ago. My bad. It's The Ripple Effect. And it is by, Mallory Blackman. That's right.
Okay. Whose name sounds familiar, and I'm going to have to do a little research to find out what else of hers I've read.
Yeah.
Because I definitely know that name. But it's funny. I lost track. I completely spaced and thought that they were going to be publishing them. I thought they were going to get to a certain point and then put them out in anything other than Kindle format or ebook format. So I'm standing there in a Barnes & Noble, and I'm like trying to explain to the pockmarked kid's face behind the counter there. I'm like, no, it's not just one of the Doctor Who novels. It's kids' short stories. It's the anniversary thing. It's like, I don't even know what the heck you're talking about. I'm like, no, just look it up in your little indexy thing here, dude, because my phone is, I can't get a signal in here to show you on my phone what I'm talking about. And finally he finds some way to reference it, and he's like, says here the publication's date not going to be until December of 2013. I'm like, how can that be? Oh, print edition. I get it. Never mind. I'm going to go get a cup of coffee and leave now.
Yeah. So.
Oops.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see who they tag for the later Doctors, because I know one of the discussions earlier on was J.K. Rowling. Yeah, and I mean I still think that she's probably going to get picked for probably 11, maybe 10.
I would have thought 10 at first.
That's what we've been saying for,
I mean, between the two, I think she might be able to have a little more fun with 10th. because I think some of her humor and her idea of sort of dialogue sarcasm as it develops sort of in some of the latter Potter books would lend itself better to Tennant.
I think. But I'm thinking mainly just her popularity paired with, you know, the fact that Eleven is the current Doctor, who, you know, there's a lot of hubbub around right now because he's leaving and this, that, and the other. It's just pairing those two, you know, huge popularities is going to be the thing. Yeah. And I know that Tennant's popular, but if you're looking at, you know, using her popularity to draw attention to the book, you're not necessarily going to pick Tennant. But I could be wrong.
I just think, like you were saying, like it's going to be a good matchup, her dialogue and all that.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way you could hold that back. You know, as soon as it's got her name attached to it, her attached to the Who franchise at all is going to be a juggernaut. So,
my brain is going to explode at that moment, regardless.
We're talking as if it's already going to happen. Well, it's just a matter of which one you're going to hand.
Yeah.
Because whichever one they hand her, you know, you're going to have to hand the other one to. Who else could they hand it to?
Who else
would be of the caliber? A recognizability and enjoyability factor. So let's just assume on the big hypothetical shelf there that they gave 10th to JK, who would take 11th. That would be of that same sort of recognizability factor.
See, that's the problem as an American who isn't a kid. You know, youth or British youth authors are kind of not my Jeopardy category of choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, oh, there's the J.K. Rowling or Rowling, and there's the other guy that does that book that does the thing. And,
why I was really surprised when they used Colfer for the first Doctor. I'm like, he was one of the most immediate UK authors that I thought of that I thought would be able to have some fun with it because it's extraterrestrial / supernatural / tech, and he kind of lent itself to it, and then they gave him First Doctor, which was kind of like a throwback. I'm like, oh, all right. Kind of take him outside his wheelhouse on that, but all right, we'll see where that goes. Yeah, I actually did just use wheelhouse. Would you prefer I said bailiwick? That's outside of his bailiwick.
I don't know. I'll be interested to see who they come up with next. But
He's not British. I was going to say Lemony Snicket, but he's actually from Boston. So that doesn't
qualify. Is Neil Gaiman British? Do we?
Yes.
All right, that's my pick.
That would be a really interesting because I think we had talked about this at one point. He's typically very vocal about the projects that he's working on. He tweets quite a bit about stuff that he's in the midst of doing, like ad nauseum. I'm sorry, Neil, I don't mean this in a derogatory sense. But he had never made any mention of the fact that he was sitting down to novel writing. He gave us almost a lifetime tweet process through when he was writing Nightmare in Silver, and saying how he was kind of enjoying what he was putting together for that as he was doing it without giving anything away. But we were aware of the fact that the project was going on. I would have thought that he'd say something about it.
Well, I mean, they could have him under a tight, don't say anything, don't give it away.
Ooh, what about Terry Pratchett?
I don't know. I don't know any of Terry Pratchett's work. I haven't actually.
Oh, you've never read any of the Discworld stuff, or okay, because that might be a good matchup. I think
could be interesting. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, well,
so more speculation for later on down the road.
Yes. Well, but speaking of novels, speaking of writers, that's going to lead us into what we'll be talking about hopefully next week, all schedules permitting, we've been mentioning the fact that with a lot of the last couple episodes, we were talking about the Valyard last week, talking about the Brig this week, you get as much or even some more interesting insight into these characters, as well as our good Doctor, from some of the approved novels and extended written formats about the universe. So one of the things we were thinking about doing was putting together an episode that said, you know what, if you've got the time and you want to get a hold of them either electronically or in that old fashioned paper and binding kind of thing that some of you crazy kids are still quaint for, there are a few out there that are some damn good stories, and are still considered approved canon. So
yeah,
I think that might be an interesting thing to take a look at. I'll have to get some stuff into y'all's hands.
Mm-hmm.
quite a bit available.
I read
money.
A few novels in the next week.
No. But if you grab them, a lot of them are available. A lot of the really, I think some of the really strong ones are available electronically through Amazon. You can grab a Kindle edition of it, or for whatever your e-reader may be, and you can sort of skim and scan and only spend about $2 or $3 a copy on them, and get some pretty interesting material. Some authors a little stronger than others, but. Find the doctor you appreciate. They got really prolific when they were writing about Eighth, obviously, because there was nothing else to do. and then with our last three doctors, we've had quite a bit of novels out there that have been pretty interesting stuff, and not just adaptations of the episodes. This is obviously alternate storylines and things to play with.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to start. We're going to do a kind of arc about the extended content. We're going to look at novels, we're going to look at comics, we're going to look at some of the spin-off TV shows. So just taking a look at stuff beyond the Netflix queue. If you've got any of the extra stuff that you want to know a little bit extra about or anything like that, let us know. If you want us to talk more about some of the Big Finish stuff, let us know what you'd like to hear about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is our chance to look beyond the typical stuff that we talk about. So
we'll get back to being typical and predictable soon enough. but for now, we'll actually be adventurous, take a couple of risks, and talk about some things that we don't normally get a chance to dive into, or that you might not get a chance to get exposed to. So this might be your opportunity to dip a toe into some things that you weren't familiar with. Mm-hmm.
So. All right. Well, you guys have anything in closing up?
I am by stock and trade, a pacifist, but this is one military man that I would want to be able to sit back with, enjoy a scotch and hear war stories all day long. I would thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. Well, this has been episode 46 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, a 50-foot monster can't swim up the Thames and attack a large building without some people noticing, but you know what politicians are like.
And this is Melissa saying, I finally know who this brigadier guy is.
She's going to grow a mustache next week, just in tribute.
Totally.
And this is Kier saying, just once, I'd like to meet an alien menace that isn't immune to bullets.
See you guys next week.
Bye.
And I'll see.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart by Murray Gold.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.